to Professor Dirk Belsted, who is with the biochemistry department at Stellenbosch University and who is part of a team which has identified or has named a newly identified fish species from Serengeti National Park in Tanzania after Sir David Attenborough. Dirk, good afternoon.
Good afternoon and good afternoon to your listeners.
I think it's fairly obvious to anybody who has any idea who David Attenborough is why you would want to name a natural species after him. Is there a sort of fairly complicated process, or can one just say, we're naming this after you, sir?
I think that technically speaking, you are permitted to name a species after whom you wish. You have to motivate that, obviously. And in this instance, I don't think that that motivation is difficult. But technically, you could name a species most probably for anyone if you would wish to do so.
But you'd have to motivate it to whom? Is there a sort of international naming body which has to approve?
Yes, there's an International Zoological Taxonomic Committee and a taxonomic code. It might interest you that there's actually a species of fish in the Congo called Fenerbahce, which is called after the soccer team. So that's also very peculiar.
It is quite peculiar. Nothobranchius attenboroughi wouldn't have had any trouble getting past the panel, though.
No, I don't think so. Certainly with Sir David motivating us to take cognizance of the fact that nature is in peril. And then also one of the reasons why we specifically named this after him was the fact that Serengeti one associates with the large mammal species that occur there, all the wildebeest that do their annual migration, lions, etc., etc. But one doesn't really notice the small species in a ecosystem, and this is called the Serengeti Mara ecosystem. And the small components are just as important as the big ones are. And that is something that Sir David did repeatedly reiterate. And so we feel that this is also one of the reasons why it's appropriate to name this after him.
I must say that one of my, I stayed at one of the camps along the Grumeti River, and one of the days we drove to the shores of Lake Victoria, and one of the most thrilling moments of my life, the first time I stood on the shores, which is roughly where you captured this killifish, this Nothobranchius, which is a very interesting species about which I know very little, but it is a species that has a lifestyle which is unusual and which is threatened, and another reason to name it after Attenborough, who keeps issuing us with these warnings.
Yes, in actual fact, it doesn't occur in the lake, nor does it really occur in the river. It occurs in these seasonal ponds. And that is actually fascinating because the fish never survive a dry season. What happens is that during the dry season, these ponds dry up. All the fishes die or they are eaten by birds. But prior to that, they lay their eggs in the mud. And what happens is they dive into the mud, lay their eggs there, and then those eggs don't develop up until such time as during the dry season the mud cracks, and then oxygen penetrates, and then the embryos develop, and then they sit there. If you look at them under the naked eye, you can see the eggs having a little eye that you can actually see the little eye of the fish that is to hatch. And then what happens is, as in the rainy season, the water appears in the pan, the little fish hatch, and then they grow at an incredibly rapid rate. Some species are capable of reproducing by 3 weeks afterwards. So they have a very so-called fast lifestyle, and they have to reproduce very rapidly. But in this way, they can in actual fact overcome and survive the dry seasons as well.
There is a team of five that has been working on this and working on this the Nothobranchius fishes, and it's Chad, Sudan, Central, Eastern Central Africa, Caprivi, Northern KwaZulu-Natal. You've put in some kilometres, Prof.
In actual fact, I have been putting in less of the kilometres. The main kilometres have been put in by Brian Waters and a gentleman from France, Bellon Nagy, And they have been collecting fishes since the early 1990s. These can be then preserved in ethanol, in alcohol, and you can do the actual analyses many years later. And these were critical, and these were then done by my student, David van der Merwe, and my collaborator, Dr. Woody Cottrell, in my laboratory. And we used DNA analysis specifically to identify these new species, and this is really the breakthrough in all of these new biological analyses, that one can sequence genes and thereby identify things that are really different to the next.
Even though they don't look different to the naked eye, they look exactly the same, but they're not.
Yeah, I mean, in this instance, we actually named a group of species, and they were distinct, and there was always a notion that they were different, but there wasn't adequate proof to actually specifically be able to name them. And that's where the DNA work has really been very valuable, because it identifies these units. And what it does, effectively, it identifies the units of conservation. In other words, instead of saying there's one thing that's distributed over a large area, it says, right, well, there are these smaller units here that we need to be careful of, in that we must preserve their habitat.
Thank you very much for taking us away from contemporary troubles, Professor Dirk Belsted, with the Biochemistry Department at Stellenbosch University.